Opening narration.
Akhotra Foundation presents The Akhotra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome, everyone, to another deep dive. Today, we're exploring the incredible life of Frederick Douglass. I mean, just a towering figure of the 19th century.
Absolutely. And his voice, his ideas on freedom and justice, they still feel so relevant, don't they?
They really do. We're focusing on his first autobiography, Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, an American Slave, which came out in 1845.
And you have to understand, this wasn't just, you know, a memoir. It was a revolutionary act.
Oh, so?
Well, think about the time. Black people's humanity, their intellect, was constantly denied. So for Douglass to write his own story using the written word, the very tool his oppressors wanted to deny him, that was defiance. Pure and simple. Seizing his narrative.
Right. Taking back control. So our goal today is to really unpack that journey. Frederick Augustus Washington Bailey, born into what he chillingly called the deepest darkness of chattel slavery. And we'll see how he transformed himself, literally from property, into a person. A powerful voice that, honestly, continues to inspire.
And the book itself, it had a couple of key jobs to do, right? First, prove his story was real. Some people just couldn't believe a formerly enslaved person could be so eloquent.
Hard to imagine now, but yeah.
And second, it was ammunition for the abolitionists. Direct, undeniable evidence of slavery's cruelty from someone who lived it. It wasn't just a story. It was testimony. A weapon.
Got it. So we'll trace his life story, dig into his core beliefs, look at those moments that changed everything for him, and figure out what his life teaches us even now.
The chronological journey. The formative years.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. He was born Frederick Augustus Washington Bailey around 1818, Tuckahoe, Maryland, but he never knew his actual birthday.
Right, and that wasn't an accident. It was part of the system, erasing identity, denying basic human markers.
And then separated from his mother, Harriet Bailey, almost immediately, as an infant.
That separation was standard practice. Mm-hmm. And just brutal. He barely knew her. He mentions these ghostly visits she made, walking miles at night just to see him for a fleeting moment before rushing back.
Ah, that's heartbreaking.
It is. And what's really stark is his reaction when she died. He was about 7. He said he felt, well, basically nothing, like a stranger had died.
Wow.
It shows just how effective slavery was at crushing natural human feeling, at dehumanizing people from the inside out.
And there was uncertainty about his father, too, right? Rumors it was his white master, Captain Anthony.
Yeah, widely believed, which put him in a really dangerous spot. Children born from such situations were often resented, sold off. It was complicated and perilous.
So his early childhood was on this huge, brutal plantation owned by Colonel Edward Lloyd.
Immense wealth built entirely on human suffering. Hundreds of enslaved people. Douglass talks about constant deprivation, hunger, cold, lack of rest. The Great House Farm produced so much luxury, but the people doing the work were starving. That contrast was sharp.
And then came that defining moment, witnessing his Aunt Hester being whipped.
Oh, that scene. It's seared into his memory and into the readers. He calls it the bloodstained gate, the real entry point into the hell of slavery. He saw her stripped, flogged mercilessly by Captain Anthony, her screams.
He says it ended his childhood innocence right there.
Absolutely. It wasn't just violence. It was the randomness, the sadistic power. It imprinted on him the true nature of the system. That experience, that terror, it became a bedrock of his later abolitionism. It planted the seed, you could say, the rise and the struggle.
Okay, so after that horrific start, things change a bit. He gets sent to Baltimore around age 7 or 8. To live with Hugh and Sophia Auld.
Yes, and Baltimore was different. A city more complex than the plantation. And Sophia Auld, she was initially kind.
Right, she hadn't owned slaves before.
Exactly. Her heart hadn't been turned to stone yet, as Douglass might say. She actually started teaching him the ABCs. He called it a moment of transcendent hope.
But that didn't last long.
Not at all. Hugh Auld found out and went ballistic. Told her reading would spoil him, make him unfit to be a slave. Unmanageable.
And that reaction was actually the key for Douglass, wasn't it?
Paradoxically, yes. Hugh Auld's prohibition became Douglass's revelation. He realized, if my master fears literacy this much, this must be the pathway from slavery to freedom.
Wow.
The very thing meant to keep him enslaved showed him the way out.
So he gets resourceful, starts learning secretly on the streets of Baltimore.
Incredibly resourceful. That famous bread for knowledge bargain. Trading bits of bread with poor white boys in exchange for reading lessons, turning the city itself into his school.
And then he gets hold of the Columbian Orator.
His university, he called it. A book full of speeches about liberty, democracy, human rights. It opened his mind, gave him language for his own feelings.
But it was painful, too.
A double-edged sword. Absolutely. It showed him the glorious ideal of freedom, but it also highlighted the sheer horror and injustice of his own situation. He saw the horrible pit, as he put it, but felt like he had no ladder to escape. It created this intense internal conflict, this torment, peak achievements, and legacy.
Let's fast forward a bit. He eventually makes his escape. The first attempt failed.
Yeah, he was betrayed, even jailed briefly. Learned he had to be much more careful, rely only on himself.
And then in 1838, he succeeds. Disguised as a sailor, makes it to New York.
A pivotal moment. Soon joined by Anna Murray, a free black woman who had encouraged and helped him. They marry, move to Massachusetts, and he adopts the name Douglas to protect himself.
And how does he become this famous speaker?
Almost by chance, initially. He's at an anti-slavery meeting in Nantucket in 1841. Someone encourages him to speak about his experiences.
And he just gets up and tells his story.
Gets up, hesitant at first, but then this raw, powerful eloquence just pours out. Someone who had actually lived slavery, speaking with such intelligence and passion. The audience was mesmerized. It basically launched his career right there.
Which leads to the narrative in 1845.
Exactly. The book is a sensation, yeah. A bestseller. It authenticates his story, makes him famous, and becomes this incredibly powerful tool for the abolitionist movement.
But also incredibly risky for him personally.
Immensely risky. By naming names and places, he confirms he's a fugitive. He actually has to flee to Great Britain for a couple of years while supporters raise money to legally purchase his freedom.
Amazing. And his life after the narrative just continued to expand.
Oh, absolutely. He starts his own newspaper, the North Star. He advises President Lincoln during the Civil War, pushing for black soldiers.
He was also a big advocate for women's suffrage.
Yes, consistently argued for universal rights. He later held significant government posts, U.S. Marshal, minister to Haiti. Think about that journey.
Yeah.
From property to diplomat.
So his legacy, it's multifaceted. Statesman, orator, intellectual.
Pioneer. He shattered racist stereotypes simply by existing and achieving what he did. He laid so much groundwork for the future civil rights movement. But I think his human legacy is the most powerful. The sheer force of will. The journey from object to subject, from property to personhood, it's unforgettable.
Core philosophy and values.
So what really drove him? What was at the core of his philosophy?
I think it's this powerful mix, you know, taking American ideals, liberty, equality, very seriously, but filtering them through the brutal lens of his own experience. He saw liberty not as some abstract concept, but as a fundamental God-given right.
And he saw how slavery corrupted everyone, not just the enslaved.
Absolutely. That experience with Sophia Auld turning cruel was a key lesson for him. Power corrupts. And knowledge. Knowledge was everything. It was power, it was freedom, the essential tool.
He also made a distinction about religion, didn't he?
A crucial one. He contrasted the hypocrisy of slaveholding Christianity of this land with what he saw as the true Christianity of Christ, love, justice, brotherhood. He called out that hypocrisy relentlessly.
So what motivated him day to day?
This deep, unquenchable thirst for freedom, intellectual, spiritual, physical freedom, a need to reclaim his own humanity, to speak for those who couldn't, and this fierce, unwavering self-respect. He refused to be anything less than human.
Three pivotal turning points.
Let's pinpoint three moments that really changed the trajectory of his life based on the narrative. What's the first?
I'd have to say Hugh Auld forbidding him to learn to read.
Right, the moment that backfired spectacularly.
Exactly. Instead of crushing his hope, it ignited his determination. It revealed the connection between literacy and liberty. It wasn't just a setback. It was the moment he understood the mechanism of his oppression and therefore the potential key to his liberation. It set him on that path of secret self-education.
Okay, pivotal moment number one. The prohibition becomes the pathway. What's second?
Definitely the fight with Edward Covey, the slave breaker.
Ah, yes, the physical confrontation.
It was so much more than physical. Covey had nearly broken him, physically and mentally, reduced him to feeling like a brute. But on that one day, Douglas decides he's had enough. He fights back for hours.
You have seen how a man was made a slave. You shall see how a slave was made a man.
Precisely. That fight was a resurrection. It rekindled his spirit, his sense of self-worth, his manhood. He proved to himself and to Covey that he would not be broken. He said after that, he truly felt like a free man. Even though he was still legally enslaved. It restored his agency.
A profound internal shift. Okay, number three.
I think it has to be that first impromptu speech in Nantucket.
The moment he finds his public voice.
Yes. Up until then, his struggle was largely internal, personal. His escape was solitary. But in Nantucket, he connects his personal story to the larger cause. He discovers the power of his own testimony to move others, to challenge the system. It transforms him from a fugitive seeking personal freedom into a public leader demanding collective liberation. That speech launched him onto the national stage.
Human lessons and reflection.
His life offers so many lessons. What stands out to you as universally human? Things we could all relate to or learn from?
Well, the power of education, clearly. Not just formal schooling, but the drive to learn, to understand the world, to gain knowledge as a tool for empowerment. His story is maybe the ultimate testament to literacy as liberation.
Absolutely. If it's feared that much, it must be powerful.
Exactly. And then there's the assertion of dignity. His fight with Covey shows that sometimes you have to stand up, physically or morally, and declare your worth even when the odds are stacked against you, reclaiming that sense of self.
We all face moments where our dignity feels challenged, maybe not in such an extreme way, but the principle holds.
It does. And also the idea of controlling your own narrative. Writing his narrative was crucial. He refused to let others define him or his experience. Telling your own story, defining yourself, is an act of power.
That feels incredibly relevant today, with social media and competing narratives everywhere.
Totally. Who gets to tell the story matters. Douglas knew that intimately. His resilience, too. Facing unimaginable brutality and despair, yet never fully giving up hope, always finding a way to resist or learn or plan, using his mind as a sanctuary. That strategic resilience is something we can all learn from when facing adversity.
Three final takeaways.
Okay, let's distill this down. If you had to pick three final takeaways from Douglas's narrative and his early life, what would they be? Let's try. One emotional, one intellectual, one universal.
All right. Tough choices, but here goes. For an emotional insight, I think it's the profound connection between asserting one's humanity and the willingness to fight for it, even risk death. That moment with Covey, it's about reclaiming your spirit against utter degradation. It hits you right in the gut.
That deep sense of self-worth being non-negotiable. Okay, an intellectual insight.
For me, it's his sharp analysis of how knowledge itself is structured as power. Understanding that denying literacy was a strategy to maintain control, and conversely, that acquiring literacy was a revolutionary act. It's a profound insight into the politics of education and information.
Literacy isn't just reading, it's understanding and challenging power structures. Got it. And finally, a universal insight.
I think it's the enduring power of controlling your own story. Douglas proved that defining yourself, telling your truth in your own words, is fundamental to freedom and identity. It's a timeless lesson for anyone seeking agency in their own life or fighting against oppressive narratives. Write your own chapter.
Closing narration.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by eContra Foundation.